All right, so after all the scholarly insights into how people are constituted and to what makes them work, at this point on page 54, number 22 in the book, he begins to set out his actual program. Now, again, you know, the thing about this program, it's interesting in that on one hand, the book was published, and this seems to be agreed to by all people, the book was published with the encouragement of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was the founder of the Musar movement, which suggests that he felt that it was a very worthwhile thing. On the other hand, one doesn't hear that much that in the tradition of the Musar yeshivas in in Eastern Europe, primarily in Lithuania, from where almost all of our Torah comes, because virtually every one of the great non-Hasidic yeshivas, including some of the Hasidic yeshivas, had as their main progenitor of the tradition of Torah, and the teacher of Torah was someone that learned in one of these yeshivas. Like almost all of our Torah comes from these yeshivas. Almost every one of them was connected up in one way or another to the Musar movement. Almost, not every single one, but almost every single one. And we don't have a kind of a, how should you say, we don't have in our tradition that they said everybody should use the Cheshbon HaNefesh system. So, I don't know. I just don't know. I guess that it means that if you feel that it could work, then you should do it. But that it's not, I don't know, it's not, you know, one system for all Jews. But it is helpful. I mean, even if you do a slightly different system, it's helpful in that it speaks to us and sort of says, we do have to have a system. You have to figure out some way to do Tikkun HaMidos, to fix up your character traits. And then if you're not going to do this, you have to do something else. So the Bali Musar spoke very much about learning Musar b'spilus, about learning Musar with fervor, meaning that you take a book of ethics, of Musar, such as Maseilas Yesharim, that tells you how one should live, and then you read it over and over and over and over with a tune, you know. And the Bali Musar advised that you put aside several minutes a day, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, to do that. And then as you're doing it, you arouse your soul to the importance improving behavior. That, together with an attempt to act out and to do what you learned about, was more the system, at least that I have in my tradition, and what I've heard from other traditions within the Muslim movement. Never did I hear such an absolute endorsement of the Cheshbon HaNefesh system. But like I say, but on the other hand, it was endorsed by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. It's certainly something that one should consider doing. I mean, I at one point I got into it, probably before I was married, and my Rosh Hashiva, who was this great scholar of Musar, was very encouraging. Like, sort of, I guess, if you feel that it would help you access what you want to access, then, you know, it could be a good thing.
Sir, Rabbi?
That's kind of how I understand it, yeah.
Are there other systemized, methods of Tikkun HaMitzvahs?
Tikkun HaMidos.
HaMidos
means the character traits.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. I mean, are there other systemized methods as that are as complex or as systematic or as in depth as this one, or is this one alternative among many, or is this the most prominent that was accepted?
I don't understand. It's not that I don't understand. When you say you don't understand something, it means you know kind of like the basics, and you don't understand something about it. But I don't. It's not I don't understand. I don't know. In the non-Lithuanian traditions of Torah scholarship, what, if anything, they did, I imagine they did something, I just don't know, what they did about Tikkun HaMidos. We, who have been exposed to the Musar tradition, have this, we have this approach. We have the approach of the Bali, of the classical Bali Musar, which is to study Musar every day. But in truth, the idea of studying Musar every day is not only particular to the Bali Musar. It's mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, right? In the beginning of Aruch Chaim, it's mentioned that a person should study the books of Musar every day. The Bali Musar sort of made a big deal out of it, number one. And number two, they said one should do it with a nigun, with a tune, should do it at a set time, driving all concerns of the world out of your head, and just to sit there and review these ideas over and over and over again. The idea being to emotionalize that which you know intellectually. Now you know you shouldn't get angry, but when the urge to get angry comes, if it's the certain stimulus that always gets a person angry. So it's very hard to act differently under the same set of, antagonizing factors that cause you to do it. So emotionalizing it, the idea is that by emotionalizing it, it creates an inner acquisition of that idea on an emotional level, and then you're able to combat the emotional desire to do the same by counteracting it with other emotions that encourage you to fight off the urge. Yes?
So they suggest you do it alone with a nigun as opposed to with a chavrusa?
Yeah, right. Chavrusa is like for Gemara. And you can study these things just to know what they say. But the idea of a Musar Seder, the classical Lithuanian yeshiva idea of a Musar Seder, is where you open up one of the Sifrei Musar. They had a special fondness for four Svarim, more above the others. There are many Musar Svarim written throughout the ages by many great people. But the four that they gave particular play to were the Mesilas Yesharim, which was written in the early 18th century by Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, and then the Chovos Halvavos, which I think was written in the 9th century.
What was that one called?
Chovos Halvavos. And then there's the Shari Tshuva, the Gates of Repentance, which was, I think, early 13th century, written by Rabbeinu Yono, and the Orchos Tzadikim, author unknown. But some say it was Rabbeinu Yonah, some say it was other people, but it was around that probably 13th century, 13th, 12th century, around there the Orchos Tzadikim comes from. Those are the four most widely used books of Musar, at least in the world of but there are many great Svarim that were written on Musar, and I have a whole shelf full of them. Rav Dessler, well, that's not the type of sefer that Rav Dessler is more like a Musar talk that was given, calling together different things in the Chazal. But like another Musar book would be, for example, there's a book called Sefer Hamidos. It was written by somebody. It's a book of the different character traits. But there's written, there's also a Rishon, I forget his name, somebody, Harofe, the doctor. There are other works of Musa written by Rabbeinu Yonah, like the Yesod HaTshuva, which is printed in the Rosh, usually in the beginning of the Rosh Hashanah Machzor. There are books like Kad HaKemach, written by Rabbeinu Bachya. So I don't know. I mean, there's lots of them out there, and they're all good, you know, they're all good.
And they all have in common that they try to improve the character traits of an individual.
They tell you what constitutes exemplary behavior and what constitutes bad behavior, and they very often will go on a characteristic by characteristic basis. Another well-known one is the Pele Yoetz, which was written by some Sephardi Rav, I think in the 1600s, is also very comprehensive. So they, huh?
Did you consider the Rambam's on Dias?
Hilchos Deos? Not really. See, that's more of a discussion about what constitutes this trait, what constitutes that trait. Like the Sifrei Moser will say, like a person should rid himself of all bad things, and he should do this and he should do that, because if you do this, then it causes the, you know, the soul to wither, and you go to hell, and if you do this, you go to Gan Eden, and da, 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 da. So when you read it over, you know, go to Gehenna and go to Gan Eden, you go to Gehenna and go to Gan Eden, go da, 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 da. You know, you can spook yourself a little. And then when the temptation comes, that emotional spook forms the basis of that which can stand up to the Nefesh of Bahamas. His way of doing it is also partially connected with Musar B'Spilus. Well, he'll say, you'll see, it's something like that, the emotional connection up to Musar is a part of what he says, but it's not quite the same. Another qualifier about what he says that I wanted to share with you is that which I think I mentioned possibly last week, the week before, that my Rebbe said that we have the tradition that most of a person's work should be on strengthening the traits that are strong, rather than on repairing the ones that are weak. So everyone has, like different types of personalities have different types of strengths. Let's say if someone is outgoing and friendly and gregarious. So it says, hey, you know, having makabel osadim b'sefer ponim yafo. So greet everybody with a smiling countenance. Well, if you're outgoing, you're tuned into people, so it's easier for you. It's having makdim shalom l'kolom. Give shalom aleichem to everybody. So, you know, say nice things to people. People that are like that have an easier time of it. Be tuned into their needs. You know, if you're into a people person, you're more easily tuned into their needs.
As opposed to, like, don't be a grouch all the time.
Someone, let's say, may be more introverted, so he may be more prone to things like being respectful, because he's introverted and he's, like, more fearful. Fearful is quite the right word, but more reluctant to intrude upon somebody's space. So he may have a greater tendency to derech eretz. He might have a greater ability to watch his lashon hara, because he's not a talker. He may be more modest, even. You know, he's more.
Is it possible that your negative qualities may be sort of? I can see the reason why you want to work on your strengths, you know, Yasher Koach yourself and hear from other people, but is it possible that the negative stuff will get neglected and then you just...
Right, well, I think that the theory is, as I understand it, as I discussed this with my Rebbe a little bit, that if you have negative strengths, they're very hard to buck. You can't make progress. You try to think of something, some behavior that you're not so proud of, and your attempts to control it. Probably, I can't say this for anybody else except for myself, but probably you will find that when you've tried to fix it up, it wasn't always successful. It didn't work so well. That's a demoralizing thing, and it tends to sour you on self-improvement because you get frustrated after a while. You lose interest in it. If you do something that you're very strong in, so then you can get a toehold on self-improvement much more easily. Once you start improving yourself, you get into a zone kind of where you're improving yourself, and then that filters down even to the weaker things because you're making progress. So the net impact on the weaker things is greater when you strengthen the stronger things than when you work directly at the weaker things. And it doesn't mean you should ignore them altogether, but that...
I think it's like, maybe it's, when you think about it, when a child's grown up, let's say a child's grown up and it's learning, and it has more of a flavor for linguistics, for the language, as opposed to maths and to science. Right. So you don't want them to neglect them, because they need those subjects to get through, but you certainly, if you want to take them for extra lessons, you want to more focus on the linguistics, because that's going to be their strong character. That's what they're going to probably be successful at as they grow older. And
right, that's a very good example. So if they focus on the linguistics, they'll become a confident student, they'll feel that they can do whatever needs to be done, and that enthusiasm will do more to help them overcome the bumps in the road from the things that are harder for them than working only on the things that are harder for them and neglecting the stuff that they're good at. Because that could also be somebody's psychology. This is what I need work on. So I'll work on the thing that I'm weak at and work on it and work at it and work at it. It's not as successful as working on the strong things. So my Rebbe said that if you do the system that he says, you should, I don't remember what he said, some of it should be things that you're good at. He might have even said most of it should be things that you're good at. He said that's our tradition. What he says is that you pick 13 things that you're weak at. And his book is only about things that you're weak at. So, I don't know, if someone really wants to actually do this, then, we could have meetings about it, but if you're interested. But I'm telling you that the Masorah I have, tradition that I have from my Rebbe, is that our tradition is not to follow, even if you're doing the system, is not to do it with 13 weak traits, but to do it with some of them, at least, that you feel are your strongest traits. And then... I'm sorry. Yeah.
So there's this sort of new field in psychology called positive psychology, where it used to be, I guess, that when you went to see a psychologist, you would talk about the things that were bothering you and the things that you were having trouble in your life. I mean, this is a broad generalization, but there's this new field in psychology called positive psychology, where you focus on all of your strengths and on all the things that you do well. And, I mean, obviously it doesn't mean you neglect completely the things that that need improvement, but the focus is generally on your positive accomplishments and stuff.
Well,
so
there you have it.
To build self-esteem.
Right, yeah, build self-esteem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not quite the... I think a lot of this pop psychology about self-esteem is like to think about things that make you feel good about yourself. I don't know if that's what you're referring to, but when you hear about it, It's like feel good, you're good, I'm good, she's good, everything's good, feel good, happy. That's not what he's talking about. He's saying that you look at yourself and you say, this is my single most most outstanding trait relative to others. You'll find it in a general, let's say, in a general sphere of things that are related, and then it might be a specific part of it that you have a special strength that someone else doesn't have. Let's say, let's say the general area of being nice to people. So you could have someone that's nice to people, and in the general, or under the general umbrella of being nice to people, you could have one, all people are nice to people, but there are several different parts of it. One is, like, you see somebody, you give them a very warm greeting. There are people that just give you a wonderful greeting when you meet them. It's a very uplifting thing when somebody really greets you warmly. Then you have someone else that doesn't greet you as warmly, but he's very happy to have you over his house. Then there's another fellow that doesn't greet you warmly, doesn't have you over his house, but he's very quick to do a favor. Then you have someone else that's not quick to do a favor, and not quick to have you over his house, and not quick and not great with the greeting, but his niceness is that if somebody's down and out, their heart goes out to them. And when they see a real nitzrach, real someone that's really in need, they just go nuts to try to make a situation better. They'll lend money. And then even within that, some people, like say, they'll lend money. Some people give money. Some people get involved hands-on, helping their lives change. Some people want to do therapy. You know, they become their friend when somebody's down and out. They spend lots of time with them, talking to them. They befriend them, and so on. So in each thing, you know, it gets more specific, and you'll find that there's something that you excel in most. So it may be that you concentrate on that the most, and then the associated things also concentrate on, and you'll build this whole part of your personality. And since it comes so easily for you, then that'll schlep everything along, like with your example of the kid. That's the tradition that I have from my Rebbe about this. I'm just telling you. Not saying it's the tradition from your Rebbe, but, you know, I'm just, you know, just teaching it as it was taught to me, you know, as I understand it.
And is that what you did when you did it?
I, you know.
Like you picked some positive
things. You pick positive things, yeah. The system of keeping track gets a little tricky also, because the system is you pick things that you did wrong during the day. Because he's talking about bad things. So let's say if a person is discourteous to people, doesn't talk nicely, he has to improve it. Says the Ramban says, "Havimidabres kolodos kolder." The Geras Ramban begins, "Tisnahik tamid." You should always have the custom, "Ludaber kolderecha," to speak all your words benachas, with gentleness, with sweetness, l'chaladim, to all people, l'chalais, and at all times. So if somebody finds himself not talking that way, so if it's a bad thing, then you keep track of, he has a system of dots where you record how many times you violated it. So if it's your bad thing, you know, it might be 10 times a day. And the idea with his training system is to get the number of dots down until they disappear, and then you can start working on something else, which is wonderful. But if you're talking about doing it right, if it's your strong thing, then the violations are few and far between. So I don't know, like, you have to figure out how to keep track. Like, you have to use a different scoring system. Like, maybe you have to do 5 positive things a day, like extra things even for you, that if you don't do it, then you get 5 demerits. So something like, I don't know, you have to figure out a way of adjusting to the way my Rebbe said to do it. I mean, that part I never got into with him. I mean, he's very familiar with this thing. You know, he knew all about it, but didn't seem to say. I never heard him say in the yeshiva, everybody should do it. You know, he didn't.
Rabbi?
It seems like a highly analytic methodology. Like, I mean, self-analysis. And is everybody's temperament to follow such a rigorous path of self-examination? Is it something
I guess it's supposed to be. He wrote it for everybody. I mean, the laws about learning Musar are for everybody. It's just some people, I guess, that are to whom analytics come. Analyses come more easily, it works better, but everybody on some level, they always analyze something. You have to analyze your checking account, you have to analyze your your work or whatever, the things you have to analyze.
Look at the month of Elul. Jews are very self-analytic people.
Well, not all Jews, but there are some that really don't go at it in the month of Elul, you know. All right, so now let's try to run through some of this text. All right, now l'chatchila, in the beginning, mazminin lohem me'atzmon, they prepare for themselves on their own, or mipisofrim usfarim, or from scribes or from books, shloshoser prakim shel musar. 13 chapters of Musar, u'shloshoser midos shonos, for 13 different character traits, meaning that you have to identify, I guess, 13, places in the Torah where they comprehensively deal with these 13 different traits that we're talking about. Then in the third line he says, the hainu l'ish v'ish kefitzarcho, each person according to his needs, l'tikon midosov hara, to fixing up his bad traits, ki tofastam rubelo tofasto. You don't, if you grab too much, you didn't grab, meaning don't grab too much. So he's saying if a person wants to work on his bad traits, don't grab too much, only pick on 13 of them. Like most people, if you'd ask them, they'd say, what are your 13 weak traits? They probably wouldn't have a real ready answer to that. But he's saying, really, we have much more than 13. But tefastam rubelo tefastam means if you grab too much, you didn't grab, meaning you won't get anything. So go easy on yourself. Don't try to repair everything bad about yourself, but only pick 13 traits, and those 13, the 13 worst things about you. About me, but I don't mean you.
Is it recorded by how you feel or how you express it? In other words, if you're angry, let's say, and you keep it in, does that mean you don't get a dot?
Well, you have to decide. If that, what does it do to you? Does it have bad effects on you? The fact that you well up with anger. Like, I know a person that conquered his anger. An old man told me that as a young man, he was very hot-tempered, and he made up that when his anger would flare at somebody, he wouldn't talk. He said he felt he couldn't control it once he opened his mouth. He said that what he did is that he would not talk. And he said that he eventually, abide by that discipline. And if somebody said the wrong thing to him, it could be like days before he would talk to them again. But he said he never said a word in anger.
That method, which I can see might be helpful for some, wouldn't work in spousal relations.
So I tell you, I spoke to his wife, and his wife said she was not happy about the program. Because he used to get angry at his wife. Like, people get angry at their wives. Spouses get angry at each other. It's part of being married. So she said that it would go 2 days, he couldn't talk to her. Because he was afraid if he opened his mouth, he would start yelling. So he wouldn't talk. So I don't know. I don't know if he was doing the right thing. I don't know if he had the right to insult her that way. I mean, maybe she understood that that's what he was all about, but you know, I'm not saying that that was the right thing to do, but
that withdrawing in a spousal relationship is not perceived positively.
Especially if it takes a few days, you know, to say good morning, you know. Good morning. So, you understand, that's why I'm not saying good morning to you, I'm not saying good night to you, I don't want to talk to you, I don't have a word.
I mean, women prefer you to communicate, and even if you're upset, to communicate.
Well, they say that they prefer, but as long as you're not upset. You get upset, they're not too happy about that either. You know. So... anyway, but be that as it may, it's interesting that he says tefastem ruvo lo tefasta. You know, don't grab too much. Just pick on 13, only 13 weak traits that you have. V'achar chach kolin. Now, there's going to be three words here that we have to learn. It's the perek, it's the chapter of Musar about this trait. That's number one. V'achar chach kolin. Tochen kol perek uperek, l'toch pisko achas. We get together the essence of each chapter into one pisko. The pisko is like a pasuk, like a phrase, a sense. O mikro echad, or one pasuk, shel musar kotzer. A short thing of musar, like in a sentence, that somehow encapsulates the essence of that chapter, that whole chapter. V'chozrin, and then we turn around. U'machnisin kol kavonas kol mikro u'mikro. Then we bring in the intent of this whole pasuk, the pasuk that encapsulates the chapter. We bring that together. Remez miyuchidlo, with a special, like, catchword. Like you make up a catchword that encapsulates the sentence. The sentence encapsulates the chapter. The sentence is the perek. The piska, or the mikra, is the sentence that encapsulates the chapter. And the pis and the remez, the hint, is some sort of a code word that you know,
it signifies.
Signifies, or you know, you, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it's evocative of the sentence. That somehow, when you read that one word, that brings to mind the sentence, which brings to mind the perek. Kol remez, each remez, the remez again, perek, piska, or mikra, remez. Remez is the hint. Remez is the one word. Kol remez mishamesh meshech shvur shleimo. Each remez you do for a whole week. Ba'ofen, in a way, sheyichlu chinuch klal haramazim, that the training of the whole group of hints will come out. Le'erech arba pomim bashara. Will come out to four times a year, because it's a cycle of 13. So the cycle of 13 repeats itself four times in 52 weeks. So in every 52 weeks, you have a cycle of the 13 midos, each one having been done for a week four times. Okay, is that right? Pam achas l'chol tkufa, once in each season. So you'll have like a spring season for trait number 1 through 13, a spring season for, you know, and so on and so forth. Uvori shona, and in the beginning, shonin osan hayud gimu prakim, we learn these 13 prakim. Now again, prakim are the whole chapters. We learn the 13 chapters, and he's already talking about very dedicated people. It means all 13 chapters we learn, medaktik in bohen kuroi, and medaktik means like you look at it very particularly and very carefully, karoi, as is fitting. B'chteihu amod mitochon, through, so that you could get from them, al tachlis kavanos had yud gimel mikros, to the like essence of the direction of these 13 sentences. V'acherkach, it means, I guess, that because the step, it goes from the chapter to the sentence. So you have to know the chapter inside and out and inside and out before you could get to a sentence. Like, I know somebody that told me, I mean, I had the pleasure or displeasure of studying for smicha b'china. So it's a funny kind of test. I mean, when I did it, it was one test. It took a day, but most of a day. But it was on a tremendous amount of information that you had to know. So someone that was in yeshiva a generation before me spent a tremendous amount of time preparing for the smicha b'china. And he said that he got to a point where he could make almost like a symbol, and the symbol would be evocative to him of a fairly large tract amount of information. And he did basically this, like he took, I don't know how exactly he did it even, he said, but he was able to make a symbol a certain way, or maybe it was a word or two, and from that he was able to review like a major part of the information. Like he had it so clear. Like it was kind of, I guess maybe it was committed to memory,
like
a certain
flash
sequence,
card, Tina.
And he had a flashcard of something, and then it just
came to mind.
Like what? Mnemonics?
So he's saying something like that you take the whole chapter, reduce it to a sentence, then you take the whole sentence and reduce it to a word. But you have to know the chapter inside and out before you can do that.
But this chapter, this is a chapter on mitos?
It's 13 chapters for the 13 traits that you're working on.
Yeah.
So let's say...
Where do you get that information? From what book?
He has his own chapters that he wrote up about 13 different traits that are later. But if you're not doing one of his traits, then you probably have to go to find the Musar Sefer that talks about these things, and if he doesn't talk about it too much, then maybe put string one or two or three or four of them together, and then that constitutes your chapter. Then you reduce it to a sentence, and then from a sentence to a word. That's his basic thing. And it sounds like before you start, you spend a large amount of time reviewing the 13 chapters so that they, in your mind, are easily reducible to a sentence and then to a word. So you sort of have to have this all percolating within you before you start. Before you start from go, not pass go, before you leave from go. Alright? So, Varishona, let's start from that sentence again. Varishona, and in the beginning, Shonim, we learn, Osan Hayud Gimel Prakim, we learn those 13 chapters, Medaktikin Bohen Kuroi, and we like look at them carefully as we should. Bechtei Lamod Mitochon, so to get from them, Al Tachlis Kavonas Hayud Gimel Mikros, to the very essence of these 13 sentences, I guess it's to really understand these 13 sentences. Okay.
Would the sentence be something that was directly taken from the chapter, or would it be something that you would invent on your own?
No, you invent on your own. Or you find maybe a pasuk that sort of says the same thing, but it's probably something you invent on your own that encapsulates the whole chapter.
Like a synthetic?
Not synthetic. It's a summation in a few words of everything that you wrote. So you can do that, but you have to have it very clear in your head before you do that. That's what he was saying. You have to review it many times, like to get to the essence of the sentence that you're about. I guess it means the sentence that you're about to write. So you first
like
have
the
to,
epitome of the whole chapter.
Right. The you know the actual heart of the chapter. Va'acherkach. And that he leaves out a step, but then he says, and then you make remazim, then you make these remas, which is these words. V'acher kach korim v'shonim hayud gimel prach remazim. Then you read and you repeat the 13, you know, flash words, that single word, that's called the remas, im piskehem, with their sentences, meresha l'sefra, from beginning to end, u'meisefa l'resha, from end to beginning, come upon him many times, you know, numerous times, atsheyu shigurim b'ficha kulam, until the whole thing gets very, very well imprinted into your mouth. U'mehayom v'ha'olam, from that day and on, ein chutzorich elo l'remez echad mehen, you only need one of those, you know, catchwords, b'chol shvua, each week, canal, as we said above. The Hainu, that is, Shabameshach Kol Yimei HaShvua, that over the all the days of the week, Hu Yizach HaRemez Im HaPiska Shelo Midaitcha Kol Kamo Shetucha. That over the course of the week, that, let's say, the week you work on trait X, Y, Z, on anger, whatever it is. So during the week, the key word that you have for anger, which reminds you of the sentence, which reminds you of the chapter, should not leave, leave you. Achiyidmu l'cha, until it would appear to you, kilu atah ro'ehu kosov mufurash neged einecha. It would be almost like you'd see it written in front of your eyes, because you're thinking about it all the time. Kilu atah shomehu, like as if you hear it, malchishin l'cha b'aznecha. People whispering it in your ear, that word, that key word, that remez. And it's as if you answer in agreement. You say that key word over. So the idea is that during the week your focus on this trait, you keep the key word for that trait in front of you all the time. You've already assimilated the chapter very, very carefully, and you've assimilated the sentence that summarizes the chapter, and when you read the key word, every time you say it, it's like the whole chapter flashes in front of your eyes. You just review it, like the whole thing, you know, you say it, so you think of the sentence, you think of the whole chapter from A to Z. It's like, you know, you open your eyes so you see the whole side of the room. So you get to the point with the chapter that you say the word, you see the whole chapter in front of you. I mean, just as we think about this, it could be that the reason this thing isn't so popular is it's just not for everybody. It's like it takes a great deal of mental energy to be able to do this. Especially, he's saying that before you start, you have to do it for all 13 character traits. It's like a major work. I mean, you know, maybe if you could take off a month and do it 8 hours a day for a month, maybe you'd be able to do it. Most people cannot do that.
So might I understand that for this one week that you're examining one particular character trait, are all your mental energies focused on eradicating that negative trait from your
personality? Well, we're going to see what he says.
Because
it's going to be in what he says. So it would be better if we read it first, and then we'll deal with this question. Okay. Well, because he's going to talk in just a minute about it.
Okay.
Just wait. Okay. So meshech yimei ha'shvua, during the days of that week, you have to, like, lust, he says, to hope. Mosa yovo mikro zel yodi, when will this pasuk come to my hands? Va'akaimeno, and I will fulfill it. Meaning that he has to be hoping that the thing that he studied about, like, just don't get angry, 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 don't get angry. Don't speak not nicely, don't speak not nicely, don't speak not nicely. So he wants that a time should come when his urge to speak not nicely, which heretofore always triggered speaking not nicely, he wants for it to come into his hand, meaning that opportunity should come before him, and instead of responding as he typically does by acting not nicely, or speaking not nicely, he'll speak nicely. So you have to hope that this thing is, when will this happen that I'll fulfill it? And then if, let's say, it doesn't happen that you'll have the opportunity to fulfill it, have a ma'arim l'kayim oso b'chol ma'adeh efshar. You should do some trickery to fulfill it as much as possible. L'fisha kol kamo shetosef l'kayim oso hayom, for however much you add, or try very hard to fulfill it today. It'll be easier to find excuse to take care of it tomorrow. Now this is hinting to one of the basic rules of the Bali Musar, and that is that when you acquire the emotional frame of mind about making an improvement in character, it has to be cemented through actual practice of this improved character trait. It's not enough to get for a person to get himself or herself emotionally revved up to want to do this improved behavior, because I guess that emotions have a way of dissipating. Let's say one gets themselves, worked up emotionally to act a certain way, but if nothing happens, then that emotionalism eventually dissipates, because it's really not your basic characteristic, it's not your basic personality. So the Bali Musar taught us that when the emotions about wanting to act a certain way are translated into exemplary behavior, then that creates an imprint upon the soul that could not be possible if you didn't do the actual behavior. So what he's saying is that you should look for a chance to do it actually. And if it doesn't do it, you have to figure out ways that you could practice doing it. Because if you don't actually do it, it's like if you learn how to do karate. If you don't actually do it, it's not going to help you. I mean, it's not quite the same thing, but because karate is mainly a physical thing, it's not a personality thing. But you get up. Person's a late sleeper. You can't get up. You can't come to shul in time. He hasn't gotten to shul on time in 30 years. There are people like that. My Rosh Hashiva used to say, there's somebody that comes 10 minutes late, somebody comes 5 minutes late, somebody comes 15 minutes late. So if the minyan is at 7 a.m., he comes 10 minutes late. If the minyan is at 8:45, he comes 10 minutes late. If the minyan is at 8 o'clock, he comes 10 minutes late. It's a minyan, like sort of like a minyan personality or minyan character trait. When that gets very deeply embedded, it's very hard to change. So if he could think and sit, think. If he can think of how to improve it, but he doesn't do anything, then it's gonna just dissipate. It's gonna fall away. So here he's saying that. He said the more you do it, the easier it's going to be to find a way to do it the next day, because it'll become part of you to a greater extent. So he says that the week of working on this trait is punctuated by reviewing that keyword, the catchword. And then by actually acting it out. And that's how much it will be imprinted in the walls of your heart, more and more, depending on how much you do it. Now, here's where he talks about what you were saying, sir. He says, Achein, however, kol shar yud beis ramazim, the other 12 keywords, right, yu tzufunim belibcha the mishmeres bavad. They should be guarded in your heart for safekeeping. El shebchol erev, but every evening, tzarech atah lekabel cheshbon, you have to make an accounting. Im lo avarta aleihem hayom, if you didn't violate them today. So it means to say that during the week you also work on the other things, but you don't work on them actively. You only work on them they're sort of in the back of your head, that are there at all times. And at night you have to make sure that you didn't violate them, and you have to check on each one of them. And for each one of them that you violated them, you have to make your dot or whatever.
So could I ask you on that note? So let's say, I'm just throwing this out. Let's say, for example, it's not so much a character trait, but let's say, for example, you want to stop doing something. So
yes.
Let's say you want to stop drinking. Let's say you're a coffeeholic. You drink coffee 10 times a day. You say, this week I'm only going to drink coffee once a day.
Yeah.
That's your, I know it's not quite, we're talking about more of just a habit, more than a character. But let's say, and the other thing is, I'm going to stop chewing my nails every single as well. So those are the two things you want to work on. And this week you're working on the coffee thing. So if you do happen to chew your nails, it's not, you've got to be more aware of it, but it's not like you've got to have to really push yourself. Week you're working on coffee.
You're just working on coffee, but you're aware of the nails.
So you should try not to do it, but it's not the end of the world if you don't, because that's not the week that you really are.
Right, right. It's like if you're home and you have 10 jobs that you have to do. You have to clean the house, you have to clean your desk, you have to wash the dishes, and you have to do this, you have to do that, and you're doing one of them. But while you're doing one, in the back of your mind, you know that you have the other things to do, and then if there's some egregious violation of one of these other things, then that's something you have to be careful about. But while you're doing one, you're not doing the others, but you bear them in mind. Let's say, you have to keep the house neat. So, clean the kitchen. Your wife is out of town, you have to clean the kitchen. So, but you also have to, you also have to sweep the floor in the den. So you're sweeping the floor in the den, and then you hear something going on in the kitchen, the water's overflowing the sink and it's flooding the floor. So you have to be aware of it. It's like the back of the mind, it's in your mind, but you're not working actively on the kitchen, you're working on the den. But if something happens, you're there. So in this case, in this situation, he's saying, you have to work on this thing. But while you're working on this thing, you have everything in the back of your mind about the other 13 traits. Because he says, the 13 traits with their ramazim, with their catchwords. So it seems that you have to have the whole 13 chapters in your head at all times, but you're forging ahead and only one at a time, one per week.
That's what he said. Was he saying that if the opportunity doesn't present itself to enact the trait, that you have to actively seek out and put yourself in a position where you might be vulnerable to having to do that?
Yes.
You're smashing somebody else's car to get anger.
I don't know if it means that you do something wrong, but
you have to expose yourself to the vulnerability of it? Or?
I'm not sure what he means. That's a pretty tricky question. I don't know the answer. I mean, it couldn't...
Do you have to simulate it or something? Or?
I don't know. I really don't know. It just sounds a little counterintuitive to say that you put yourself... you do something funky to make yourself...
It's more try not to avoid it. So let's say, for example, if you get angry when you talk to people, try not to, you know, if you know you're going to be like secluded for a week because you're on some assignment away, you know, try to make sure you do get yourself involved with people that you are able to expose.
That's interesting. See what he's saying? He's like threading the needle a little bit. He said, you have to be involved with people where the thing might come up, but not...
Don't bait people to be mad at you.
Right, right. That may be a way of resolving the issue. I don't know. You know. So, we had said something before. I said we'll come to it. This
you
is what I had
to
in
it.
Mind.
You got
I
to
got
it.
To it, right.
It was about
remember
whether you neglect
okay.
the other ones.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's right. So I said we'll come to it. So it seems as that you neglect them, but you don't neglect them. You neglect them in the sense that you only work on one. But you don't neglect them in that you have to keep, at the same time, you have to keep an accounting of everything at once with their, you know, remuzim, with the catchword, but the catchword reminds you of the sentence, which reminds you of the chapter. So you're like running around with 12 chapters in your head, but you're only focusing on one. The others, 12, all need to be there, so you'll be perfectly aware of when you've done something that violates any one of the 12. But the forging ahead is only on this one. That's his basic.
And I guess that, like, if you were to draw a bar graph or something with 13 bars, there would be one that would advance, and then the others would come up gradually, and then one would come, and
right.
they all, like, over time, they all kind of
well, that's what he's going to say. That you know, because he talks about quarterly summaries, and weekly summaries, and quarterly summaries, and I think he has an end of the year summary. So all these summaries then are used to track your, you know, where you, you know, like this, have you improved over the quarter? Have you improved this? Have you improved that? And that's what he's, that's his basic system. All right, I think that's enough for now.
We're
over our time.
Next week you're going to be